morning. It is 10:01, August 28th, 2024. And I call this regular meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. All three commissioners, Commissioner Sherry Haugenhofer, Commissioner Julie Fedorchek, and myself, Randy Christman, are here, so we have a quorum. And before we kick things off, would you please join me in standing as we pledge our allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So I've been fired up about opening comments for the last 6 days.
Ooh.
Because there's a great story to tell about this agency that I'm awful proud of. Our audit was concluded. I got the results back. And for those that are listening that are unfamiliar with this, I kind of take, you know, the process of that for granted, because when I was in the legislature, a great senator named Ken Solberg from Rugby told me, you should get on the Laffercy committee because you'll learn about what all these agencies do instead of just having them come and present their budgets. One of the best and most important pieces of advice I ever got. I asked to be on Laffercy, did it the whole rest of my time when I was in the Senate, and learned so much. And I tell you, I think everyone knows now, we have an auditor that really likes to dig. And you know, he has his people going after us. And these audits are not necessarily a cakewalk for our staff that has to keep chasing around and getting them all the things we need, all the way from Steve and Jill. I know Sheila Zacher did a lot with organizing things and, you know, getting them the things they need. Really, our whole administrative team, but especially Jill Miller and Shelley Bosky and Jerry Schmaltz, because of the areas they were digging in. Erica as well. I know that Pamela, our legal assistant, did a lot of work on it. But they go into things, procurement for one. As I like to say, we got a lot of procuring going on around here. And as an example of it, if we pass our consent agenda, we're going to return almost $500,000 to I don't know how many cases from their filing fees. And all that stuff has to balance out. But I think a lot of people think that's just the end, like, do we end up with the right amount of dollars at the end of the year? But it's far more than that. They look at our travel, which is a kind of a big discussion in the news the last few months. Our expenses and deposits, we changed in the two sessions ago and do more self-funding. And so all that's dug into. So we get our audit results. On the first page, there's a paragraph on what we looked at and why, and then what we found is seven words and the rest is a blank page. The audit did not identify any areas of concern. I guess that's eight words. But then as you go into it more, the more complete analysis, the audit results page. The conclusion, no errors, internal control weaknesses, or potential violations of law were identified. And that's it. What a great result after a really thorough audit. And thanks to our team for getting them the things that they needed and helping them to understand what we do here and everything so that we can get it all finalized. And I'm just really proud of this agency and everybody that works here. That, you know, because anybody can make a mistake, and mistakes will happen. Our audits won't always be perfect. Someone could have, you know, lost a receipt along the way or something like that. But in this case, it's a perfect audit, and I just really wanted to make that known. Commissioner Haugenhofer?
Well, you explained it very well. No findings are great findings. So kudos to the staff who did a lot of work. I know it's a lot of work, and along with doing your day-to-day duties. So great job, staff. We appreciate it. I'm glad you recognize Ken Solberg from the great city of Rugby, North Dakota. Mm-hmm. His advice to you, Randy. So I'll think of some advice to give to you, too. So that will be long-lasting. I just want to mention these past couple weeks, we've had our three utility companies in for a review of their cybersecurity plans. And very impressed with the companies in their preparedness on cyber and physical security, their annual review. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the three utilities for coming in and the work done, and to my counterparts, Randy and Julie, for, you know, being in those meetings and really digging in depth this year a little bit more on their cyber and physical security. So that's all I have.
Commissioner Fedorche?
Thanks, both of you. I'll just play off of what you've said. I thought the discussions on cyber were, you know, important, but unsettling, of course, because, you know, there's a lot going on out there in this world, and everyone needs to be on guard, and it's great to hear how the folks who are in charge of ensuring that our grid is protected in North Dakota, what they're doing and how they're doing it, and how they're constantly staying on their toes and interacting with the important federal and regional entities needed to do that. So really great, great work for you too, Sherry, on your engagement nationally on that issue. It is an important piece for us all to work on here and stay focused on and be informed, and also to Leaf in on staff, who is kind of our point person and really engaging on that. So great work all around. I hadn't heard of the name Ken Solberg for so long. That was fun to think about him and his sort of stature. I just remember him as being kind of tough, and I was young. I was a young whippersnapper when I worked with Ken Solberg, and I remember being kind of scared of him. So I'm glad he gave you good and lasting advice. And as it relates to the audit, I'll throw my appreciation in to our staff as well on that. And I'm looking in front of me. I have our mission statement on a sticky note and our values. And I think this work really speaks to a couple of our key values. The one that jumps out at me the most is continuous improvement, because we have always looked at the results of those audits and incorporated them and tried to, you know, do whatever they suggested and improve for the next time. And this is the first time we've had an audit like that since I've been here. I think it's pretty unusual for an agency to get an audit like that. I haven't been in Laferce to see them, but I would bet it's pretty exceptional to have an audit that's that clean. So the continuous improvement that we don't just use as happy words, we actually embrace it, is really, this is evidence of that, I think. And also the collaboration, which is one of our other values. That collaboration is also, you expressed it well, and all the people who are working on that audit. So thanks for highlighting that, and thanks to the team for your great work.
Thank you. I just can't resist, because Ken Solberg and I hit it off so well, because I was a cattle producer and he had a sales barn. And so just I didn't think of it until now, the comparison between him as a major mentor of mine in the Senate, and then subsequently Brian Kalk as a mentor of mine here at the PSC, and both seemed to think they were going to make Marines of us. Like themselves. So. Okay, so we have 16 items on the consent calendar. I move approval of those 16 items plus the minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular calendar, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in True Connect Communications Incorporated, designated eligible carrier application, case number PU-24-88.
Second.
So on February 28th, True Connect Communications filed an application for designation as an ETC for the purpose of receiving their federal universal service support for low-income consumers. It's also known as Lifeline-only ETC designation. True Connect proposes to provide Lifeline services to eligible low-income customers as a commercial mobile radio service, CMRS, carrier, throughout every telephone exchange in North Dakota. On March 27th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until May 10th for comments and requests for hearing. None were received. The notice stated that we can determine the matter without a formal hearing. So in June, we held an informal hearing to discuss the issues. Some of the things we learned were that True Connect was organized and incorporated in 2001. Under its original name of Telscape Communications. Then in 2016, Telscape changed its name to True Connect. They generate revenue from non-Lifeline services in other areas and have access to capital from investors. They currently provide service to about 600,000 customers. So True Connect is not solely dependent on reimbursements from the Universal Service Fund. They propose to provide services to customers in North Dakota by using the underlying networks of T-Mobile and Verizon. They're currently authorized as a wireless ETC in 28 states and plus the Virgin Islands, and that is a change from the application and even from when we had our informal. At that point, they were in 7 states plus the Virgin Islands, so over the summer they've picked up 21 more. True Connect will offer plan options, including unlimited anytime prepaid minutes, unlimited text messages, and 4.5 gigs of data at zero net cost to an eligible non-tribal Lifeline customer. They will offer to all customers a free or discounted handset or SIM card, customer calling features at no charge that include 911, caller ID, call waiting, voicemail, and the ability to use voice minutes for domestic long distance. They're seeking only Lifeline support from the low income mechanism of the Federal Universal Service Fund. So they are not seeking the high cost support, and so they shouldn't interfere with our telecommunications cooperatives that use that high support mechanism. So since True Connect is a CMRS provider, it does not have an official telephone directory in North Dakota, and so they requested a waiver from that requirement in law, and the law does allow us to grant waivers. So the two provisions in the order that I want to highlight are, one, the designated service area in North Dakota is all study areas in the whole state, and in the third order, part is granting that waiver from the directory requirement.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Well, what is fortunately in North Dakota a rather limited number of people who actually qualify for Lifeline services. But we certainly want to make sure that those people who do qualify have the opportunities and access that they need. We certainly should be in no shortage of Lifeline-only providers in North Dakota because it seems like we approve one just about every month. Yeah. So, but anyway, I guess they're welcome under the law to provide service here, and they can see if they can find a new customer that doesn't already have 6 or 8 options sitting in front of them. That concludes my portfolio, Commissioner Haugenhofer.
Thank you, Chair. I move the Commission issue a notice of public hearing in Otter Tail Power Company 2023 electric rate increase, application case number PU-23-342. Second. On November 2nd, Otter Tail filed a notice of change in rates for electrical service According to North Dakota Century Code and North Dakota Administrative Code section, Otter Tail proposes a 17.36 million or 8.43% increase to its annual North Dakota electric revenues. Interim rates subject to refund were approved on December 13, 2023. A public hearing is scheduled to begin December 16, 2024 at 8:30 a.m. Central Time in the Commission Hearing Room here at the Capitol on 12th floor. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are: what is the value of Otter Tail Power's property use and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Second, what is Otter Tail's rate of return on its property use and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Third, what is just and reasonable rate of return on Otter Tail's property use and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Fourth, what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on Otter Tail's property use and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Are Otter Tail's rates schedules designed in such a manner that they will result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without undue discrimination? Again, public hearing is to begin the week of December 16th at 8:30 a.m. here in the commission room in Bismarck.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I think an Advent rate case will be a first for us in my time here. So I guess that's the only time we could fit it into the calendar. So,
is there any further discussion?
Is that better or worse than a Lent rate case?
Depends on what you give up.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
This next one is it's two cases in one because it concerns one company. So I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Public Service Commission, Industrial Builders Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Numbers DM24-20 and DM24-21.
Second.
On January 5th, the Commission received two North Dakota One Call complaints from Montana Dakota Utilities. Each complaint alleges industrial builders violated our North Dakota One Call. Once we received the complaint, the staff did their due diligence in corresponding with the company and then received the response back. The findings, the circumstances surrounding this are as follows. On October 10th, industrial builders provided four excavation notices to the North Dakota One Call to provide cement stabilization to a depth of 5 feet to support the reconstruction of four sections in this city streets in Glen Ullin, North Dakota. On October 11th, MDU marked their facilities in response to the North Dakota One Call tickets. So the first case, DM24-20, on the 12th, industrial builders struck a 3/4-inch gas pipeline providing service to one of the residents in Glen Ullin, causing damages of less than $1,300. Industrial builders did notify MDU of the line strike. However, they failed to call 911. MDU responded, shutting off the gas and making the necessary repairs, and service was restored that day. So in our one call law, that if there is a gas strike, they need to report it to 911, which was the failure on their part. Regarding case number DM-24-21, on October 14th, MDU customer called indicating that their furnace and hot water were not functioning. MDU dispatched a technician who investigated the no gas station and found that the three-fourths gas pipeline serving the residents had been sheared off by industrial builders. The damages at that property were approximately $575. Industrial builders stated their equipment operator did not know that they struck the line. The statement is supported by MDU. MDU stated that this service line had an emergency flow valve, which was automatically closed. And if the EFV valve senses an extreme drop in pressure, and so a release of pressure from the line would not be noticed. The repair was done. So looking at these two cases, Industrial Builders has had some violation, as indicated in the first case, that they failed to contact 911 after they struck the valve. And under this consent agreement, the following has occurred. Industrial Builders is assessed a civil penalty of $2,500, with $1,000 is suspended on the condition that they commit no further violation within 5 years of the date of this order. Industrial Builders will remit the $1,500 civil penalty payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 days of this order. In the event the commission finds Industrial Builders violated further one-call violations, they will have to resubmit the full penalty of the suspension within those of any imposed subsequent violations. In talking with the staff, it was a good educational review with Industrial Builders on some of this, and they entered into good faith negotiations with us, and I approve this consent order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I have a few, just a few questions. I want to try to learn a little bit more about some of the specifics on the law in this these two instances. It might need Conrad to answer some of this, but so first of all, I want to start by saying great job getting after this so quickly. This just happened in January, and so I love that we're getting through our one call issues on a real timely basis and really staying on top of them. So thanks for doing that, Conrad and Sherry. So I'm curious, though, like, and this gets to kind of the legal change that you're proposing in the for the next legislative session too. So all of this kind of comes together, but when it comes to the 24-20, so the gas line strike that they that MDU came out, shut the line, power off. They didn't call it the 911, but they struck the line. So are we saying that hitting the line wasn't a problem and that it was just the failing to call 911?
No, the other portion of that is the fail to excavate in a careful and prudent manner.
So that violation was really both those?
Yeah, you have essentially, if you look at it from that standpoint, two violations of the Century Code. Fail to excavate in a careful and prudent manner and the failure to contact 911 after the release of a flammable or toxic.
But I thought that the failure to excavate in a careful and prudent manner was just for the second one where they hit the line that automatically shut off because of the pressurization valve. That was the one that we're saying was the failing to excavate in a careful and prudent manner.
Both of them would be failure to excavate in a careful and prudent manner. The 911 failure to contact 911 would go with the first one because they knew that they struck it. They contacted the operator but didn't call 911 in that case. The second one, because of that EVF valve, they did not know that they had struck the line. So they didn't know to call the operator or contact 911.
Okay, so the first one, the first one is both those violations, and then the second one is just the failure to excavate in a careful and prudent manner.
That's correct, Commissioner.
All right. So then What I'm confused by, and this is just a clarification, two pieces here, where we say it's under the discussion section of the consent agreement itself, okay, not our order. So there were provided the four excavation notices to provide cement stabilization to a depth of 5 feet to support the reconstruction of four sections of city streets in Glen Ullin. So if a company is working in a depth of 5 feet but calls it reconstruction, is there any interpretation that suggests that they don't have to follow the one call law?
Not from my standpoint, Commissioner.
Did they suggest that?
They had discussed the exemption, and what the, you know, as far as, well, you know, they still put in the tickets, and then they did look at that exemption, saying, well, this was normal maintenance of roads and streets, so we didn't have to do that. And
never heard that in 12 years, like anybody suggesting that in you can go 5 feet down as long as it's normal repair,
right,
so, and not worry about the one call laws. They aren't,
right,
really,
so,
saying that, right?
They, at that point, that was the determination, you know, that they were working with MDU on whether they were going to pay for the damages, MDU's bills,
okay,
for that damages or not. But when I had spoke with industrial builders, the way staff, we have viewed it is, well, the first thing you did is you put in your one call tickets. So an MDU
which
marked
is
their
great
lines,
like,
which is great.
Job.
That's what we want.
Yes.
That's exactly what we're going for. You don't get to say, well, we're exempt from doing it when you've already taken the action to do the one call tickets, right? The exemption,
right,
is saying we wouldn't have to call one call.
And that's, you're kind of walking into the next one that I wanted to bring up, where,
sure,
we say under alleged violation one, the second paragraph, well, industrial builders is claiming that road maintenance exemption, they called in the notices and the operators marked underground facilities. Therefore, industrial builders has responsibility to protect those facilities. But we don't want to suggest that if they hadn't called in, they wouldn't have to protect the facilities and they would have been exempt under this repair.
That's correct, and that's.
I mean, it sounds like it that way.
Okay, that's not the conversations that I've had with industrial builders. I wanted to ensure that we clarified that while you're talking about an exemption here, we're not here to evaluate the exemption because you already called in the one call tickets and you knew where the facilities were. So therefore, you now have to protect those facilities.
But we don't want to suggest to these companies then, because if I was them, I'd be like, well, I'm not calling in for the one call the next time,
right,
then.
And that was part of the conversation we had. And I said, well, in this situation, I said, you need to call in the one calls as a staff perspective on it. Now, they could choose to have a hearing for the commission to bring forward their side if they choose. But,
and under what situation or circumstances could they not call in for the one call?
The way from my perspective as staff, the way I view this is if they're going to be going in and doing like a mill and overlay, they're doing some pothole repair on the street, you know, anything that's not going to be getting into the roadbed itself, it's going to be dealing essentially with the pavement.
Just the top.
They would not need to call in a one call. So you see that happen where a city or a township county comes in and they take off the first two layers of asphalt, but you're actually still driving on pavement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody could say, well, that's excavation. Well, then in that sense, staff views that as that would meet the requirements of the exemption because you're not actually breaking through that pavement. You're not going into the roadbed, the dirt, gravel roadbed that's below.
I think I'd be more comfortable, and I don't know that it needs to be changed here, but I think we need to, where we say, well, industrial builders is claiming the road maintenance exemption found in this, they called in. I think it would be more appropriate and clear to describe it as, well, industrial builders is claiming the road maintenance exemption found in NDCC, et cetera. This clearly doesn't fall under that type of construction. Okay. Because they're digging. It isn't just on the surface, you know. So I think we need to make it clear that this doesn't qualify for that in our judgment. wouldn't have. So we definitely don't want to suggest to people that, or to them or any other builder that looks at this, that their error and the reason why they're being penalized is because they did call and then they failed to protect. If they hadn't called, then they wouldn't have had to protect. And I feel like the way we're describing it here sort of suggests that. So then that's all cleared up in my mind, and we're further clarifying this with proposed language, right?
That's correct. That's what we're hoping to do.
Yeah. Okay, because, yeah, I can see how confusing it is. Yeah. And then I would just say, just from my perspective, I'm going to support this, but I think anytime gas is involved, I think the penalties are warranted to be higher than this, because it can be so severe. Like, there could have been an explosion the minute they hit that line. And especially the second one where they hit it and it had the valve, thank God. Otherwise, that would have been leaking gas until, you know, somebody smelt it or something else happened. So thank goodness for the shutoff valve on the second one where they hit it and didn't even realize. So, the gas stuff is just really very serious. So I think we need to make sure that we're setting the penalties appropriate for the level of severities.
Okay,
that's it for me. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
All right, thank you. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Harmony Solar ND LLC Harmony Solar Project, Cass County Siting Application Case Number PU-18-219.
Second.
So in February of 2019, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility for Harmony Solar. It was our first commercial solar generation facility that we had permitted in the state. They haven't constructed that facility yet, and so their permit expires, and this is a request to extend the permit for another 5 years. Basically, it would be an order of continuing suitability. And so anybody who wants to comment on this, the comments or requests for hearing must be received by October 11th of this year, and we can, if deemed appropriate, we can determine the matter without a formal hearing. I'll want at least an informal hearing on this because there are some changes to the project that they're bringing forward. And I haven't found it in the application specifically if they have an off-taker or not. It sort of seems like it because their project timeline is somewhat immediate, and it looks like they hope to start constructing and completing it in the next year or so. So they must have an off-taker, but I haven't found one. And there's just some other things that I think we'd want to visit with them about. But also, if the public wants a formal hearing, that would certainly be something we can consider. And if anybody does desire one, again, let us know by October 11th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I think construction seemed right around the corner in 2018, too, when we had the hearing. So.
Yeah, that was in kind of a rush, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
we rushed to do that one.
Is there any further discussion?
We always try to be responsive. Another one of our values.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That's it for me.
That concludes our agenda. A few announcements here. This afternoon, we have an informal hearing at 1:30 on Montana Dakota Utilities alternative energy allocation methodology. And the alternative methodology is about their fuel and purchase power. That's case number PU 2499. Some big things coming up after today on September 3rd, 4th, and 5th is when we have our formal hearing on NSP's natural gas rate increase. That's case PU 23367. There is a settlement proposal on the table, and so usually in those cases, the hearings don't last near as long as they would have without the settlement, so it probably won't last all 3 days, but that is what it is scheduled for. I also want to point out then that on that Friday, September 6th, are our RTO updates. SPP in the morning at 9 o'clock, MISO in the afternoon at 1:30, and then September 11th, 911 day, is our regular commission meeting. And usually I quit there at the next regular scheduled meeting, but I do want to just jump ahead to point out that then the next regular meeting after that has been changed. Our Wednesday, September 25th regular commission meeting is canceled. It is moved to Friday, September 27th, and thus it is listed as a special commission meeting. That concludes the announcements. With that, we'll stand in recess and take questions from the press, a short break, and then reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting. So with that, this regular meeting is adjourned, and